Welcome to Freedom from CPTSD and Anxiety. I'm your host, Monique Coven. I'm a certified trauma, recovery, and resilience coach, and I've recovered from chronic PTSD, from childhood trauma. This podcast is all about hope and recovery. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, I have back with me therapist Natalie Gutierrez, and we're going to be talking about the holidays and how we can prepare ourselves so that we can feel more empowered during the holidays. I hope you find this episode helpful.
Hi, Natalie.
Hi, Monique. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me on again.
Again, yes, I had you on. We were talking about the narcissistic parent last time, and it was so helpful for so many people. So I'm happy to have you back.
I'm so thankful that it was helpful. It's so important to talk about. It's so important to talk about.
It is. It is. And to know that we're not alone. So I thought you would be a great person to bring back. We're coming very close to Christmas, and already the wheels are turning in the stomach and in the mind when we are starting to think about having to be with some of the family members that maybe are perpetrators or have caused us harm. And I thought we could talk a little bit about, you know, how can we keep ourselves feeling both safe and nurtured and empowered before and while we are actually there.
Yes, very important, because it feels like you're saying, like, the holidays just bring up a lot in people. And when we're finding ourselves having to make the choice of whether or not to attend these family functions, our natural, at least the desire for some people, is to just run away, right? To say, like, that's it, I won't do it. But and that's okay. And one of the first things I tell people when they are struggling about whether or not to attend a family function is that really they know best, right? Like, they know best whether or not their dynamic with their family is going to cause more harm, and where they are in their healing journey, and whether or not they feel like that's something that they're willing to tolerate and can. And so the first thing I always say is really remembering that it's okay to say no. That it's okay to say, no, I can't go this year. I don't want to, or I won't go this year. And that you just engage in your self-care, and your self-care may look like that. And then that's okay. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, there are people who are maybe less clear about whether or not they want to go, but are actually kind of leaning to that they want to go, because at the same time, these family members may have caused hurt, may have caused pain, but they also still experience love toward them. Mm-hmm. And these people may want to attend these family gatherings, but they want to they want to do so in a safe way. Yeah. They want to do it where, like you're saying, like they can create a safe space for themselves, and that they can take care of themselves in the process. So one, I think it's giving yourself permission to say no if you just feel like you truly cannot attend this family gathering. And then two, if you feel like you want to but are afraid to, that you also begin to implement the tools in your toolbox around self-care. I often hear, and I think especially when I've, the way that I've grown up with the people around me has been like, when you go to family functions, the number one questions, or the three most asked questions is the where's your, you know, what's happening in your relationships? Like, yeah. What? Like, do you have a partner? Like, what's happening? And depending on the age that you're going into, it's like, you know, the clock is ticking, or like, you also have these remarks on or about your body weight.
Mm-hmm.
So you've lost weight, you've gained weight, right?
Like, this is so funny how universal this is, isn't it?
Yeah, and these questions, like, no matter. Like, no one has gotten the hint yet that these are not questions that you ask, or no. Like, or like family planning, when everyone wants to get in your business about family planning, and when mm-hmm. you're having your first child or your next child, and like just all these kind of questions that just kind of put you in this mood where you're like, ah, why did I come? or this violation of boundaries, these unrealistic expectations, and the unresolved hurt that it feels like when you're going to these functions that you have to pretend didn't happen.
Yes.
Especially when we talk about if for people that have family members that are narcissists.
Mm-hmm.
It can be really hard.
Yeah. And you know, they've spent their lives having to pretend, and now they are doing it again. And it gets so much harder as you get older. To pretend, and at the same time you feel so angry, like, don't they know what they did?
But right,
smile and just yeah, it's tough.
Yes, especially when you're saying like, don't they know what they did? You hear that too when the person that, I mean, they'll deny it, right? And then the person, the survivor, feels gaslit, you know, feels like dismissed, and it makes it even harder to be in these family spaces, knowing that, and knowing that your truth isn't held, and it just makes it super, super difficult.
Yeah.
So one of the ways that I think, actually, I want to say the most important way, quite frankly, is really taking those deep breaths. Taking those deep breaths and relaxing your body and really scanning your body for tension in your muscles, because you are naturally going to experience activation. Your body is naturally going to be tense. Your muscles are not going to be relaxed with family members that have caused you pain.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one, normalizing that it's okay to have my feelings around these people. These people have, you know, I have past painful memories associated with being around them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think relaxing your body and really releasing the tension in your muscles will help to at least deactivate your sympathetic nervous system, deactivate your fight or flight response, so that you can be your calmest, your smartest, and your strongest self when you're around them. Because if you're going to navigate these people, if you're going to navigate what feels or what may feel like toxicity, that you need to do it from a place where you are giving yourself a safe body first.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. It's really hard to navigate an environment where you feel unsafe, like externally, while you are also internally feeling unsafe, or you are internally feeling tense. It's very difficult to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that's coming to my mind is that when we're spending a lot of time anticipating what's going to happen, and we play the whole scenario in our head, and we're even doing that when we're around them, that itself is creating a lot of physiological sensations within us. And so part of it too, I think, is recognizing that and maybe not going into that as much, and just kind of being present in a way so that we're not like activating it, and you know.
Yes, definitely, definitely, definitely. And I think, I mean, for your own health, right? For our own health, it's important that we try to give ourselves a safe body as often as we can, as often as we can, so that we have better health in the long run.
Yeah.
So I think that is the first thing, like noticing, scanning your body, noticing, am I tense right now? Because you will be. Am I tense right now? And how can I care for myself right now? breathing into your body, breathing into your body, just relaxing your muscles, being less tense. Because, you know, let's say someone is saying a snarky remark to you or something. You want to be your calmest, smartest, strongest self when you're responding to that. Mm-hmm. You don't want to respond from an activated place. You don't want to respond through anger. You don't want to respond through explosion. You want to respond from a place like, hey, that hurt me. So definitely releasing the tension in your muscles. And if you're feeling like breathing isn't enough, I would recommend taking some time out in the process so that you're engaging with these people in doses.
So what would that look like?
So that could look like going to the restroom and just, you know, either like putting water on your face or just going to the restroom with a glass of water and just having that glass of water. It could look like taking a walk outside and just getting some fresh air. Move a muscle, change a thought, you know, like movement. So removing yourself and then going back into the environment, just continuing to take those little mini timeouts so you can offer yourself some reprieve from being around them.
And I really like that, Natalie, because it also, you're kind of giving yourself a new message like, hey, I'm not stuck. There is a way of escape now.
Yes.
Myself, and I can come back whenever I choose. So I really like that.
Yes, actually. And I hadn't even thought of that. So I love, Monique, that you brought that up, because it is, many survivors of trauma have felt trapped, right? This feeling of helplessness and all of that. So yes, absolutely. That's even more. You are sending yourself the message cognitively, and you're also like speaking to your autonomic nervous system, and you're saying, we're safe. And I can keep us safe.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
And
then, oh, sorry.
No.
I was getting ahead of you, because you have one, you were talking about this visualization. I'll let you talk about it, because I really liked it.
Yes. So I am a visual person. I like to just envision myself in stuff or doing stuff. And I feel like that kind of elicits these responses in my body that feels real to me. So if you are a visual person, this is something that could perhaps work for you. What I like to do is, when I know that I'm going to be around people that are probably going to deplete my energy, I create and visualize this buffer. So for me, what works for me is I envision myself in, like, I want to say, you know, those inflatable donuts, but you know, like those little tubes that like have the hole in the middle that you kind of can swim in, and they're like used as flotation devices kind of thing. So I envision myself in one of those like inflatable floaties where like it's pretty bouncy and things can just bounce off of it. And I visualize this as a barrier so that things like, you know, toxic messages or toxic energy or people trying to drain my spirit, I make sure that this barrier protects me, that it bounces right off. For me, I want it to bounce off. I don't want it to like seep in. I want it to just like bounce right off. So like bounces back in their direction. So like take that, you know, like take it back. That belongs to you.
That's right.
So that is helpful for me, because I feel like I'm in my own little circle, like my own little sphere of influence, and I can provide the safety for myself. And whatever you're throwing at me is going to bounce right back to you. I'm protected.
So does that, I love that. Does that also mean that if it's bouncing off of you and you're picturing that, that it's almost like, what comes to my mind is, you know, they talk about the gray rock, like, is that what it is? It's just not grabbing it, just letting it bounce off.
Yes. Yes. Definitely like a gray rock. And that's a way, so this is like the visual, like this is my visual of gray rock. And it's just been really, really helpful for me. It's my visualization of gray rock in a way that feels good, because it also has a symbolism of, like, for me, I'm in the water and I have this little donut, this little floaty, and it's saving me. Like, it is it's protecting me and it's keeping me afloat.
I love that. It's yeah, I get a sense of safety and empowerment. Like no matter what is thrown at me, I'm safe and it's bouncing off.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So you would do that visualization like before you go or a few days or?
As often as I need to. Like I there have been times where I have done it like right before and then I get there and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. Like
I need a bathroom.
Yeah. Right. I just got there and I need to go to the bathroom. And I will just, again, I'll say like, remember my donut, remember that I'm good. And remember that I can leave at any time and I am in control. And unlike childhood, mm-hmm. I can help myself and I can get out of the situation that if it makes me uncomfortable, I can remove myself. I am safe. And that feels right. And that feels very empowering for me. And then I can go out, you know, and do it as much as I need to. But I have been in moments where I'm like, okay, remind myself, donut. And I'll say my safe word, like my donut. Like I'm in my donut.
Oh,
That's been helpful. And I think sometimes there has always, I shouldn't say always, but like there have been times where I have had to utilize my visualization of buffer and also actually set verbal boundaries. Where I've had to, utilize I statements. And I find that to be actually very powerful, not only in just, you know, in like during the holidays with your family and with anyone that has narcissism, but even just in your like everyday relationships. Instead of if someone is saying something that is hurtful to you or if they're speaking to you in a way that feels disrespectful or hurtful, let's say they're raising their voice at you, that instead of just giving it right back to them, really making sure that you are being the person that you want to be in these moments. And so if that person, so I guess I should backtrack and say like one of the things that I've also done and I've also recommended is when you're going into these family gatherings that you prepare in your mind, who do you want to be in these moments? Like, who do you want to be at these events? Do you want to be the person that is, you know, aggressive or that's mirroring what the other family members are doing? Or do you want to be the person that is like grounded, centered, and is like, you're not going to faze me today. Like, you're not going to faze me today. And if you want to be that person, if you want to be that person at those events that says, I'm going to do things differently and I'm not going to let you faze me today, but I am also going to speak up for myself and set my boundaries, that utilizing I statements is one of those ways that you can get your needs met and you can communicate how somebody made you feel while also being grounded and centered, while acting through your centered self and not breaching your own integrity so that you can walk away with your self-respect.
So my question is, and I'm trying to speak for the audience because I'm imagining if they've never felt comfortable speaking up, especially to, let's say, a narcissistic mom, it's not always so easy to, you know, tell them, I feel such and such. I don't know. How would you phrase that? Or how would you describe this happening?
I would say to that, number one, completely understand it, because if you have a narcissistic mother, if you have a narcissistic father, if you have a narcissistic aunt or uncle or whomever, they are probably not going to hear what you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably not. So then it's important to ask yourself, what do you want to get out of this conversation? You know, like what do you want to get out of this? Is it that are you expecting a response that is hearing you, or are you just wanting to express that what they did feels hurtful to you?
Yes. That's a little bit different. I kind of like that because it's not that you're going to necessarily get them to hear you. They never did before, but rather now you are speaking up. So this is more for you.
Right. This isn't like where you are suddenly, I mean, I hope this happens for someone where they suddenly have this conversation with, and then someone, a light bulb goes on to the narcissistic parent or caregiver and they're like, hey, I'm so sorry. But I think always the expectation is not of their response, but more for you to have your voice heard, for you not to be silenced.
Yes. I love that. And I see that by saying the I, you're not, you know, pointing to them and saying you, would really enrage them.
Right. So the I statement would be something like, let's say if the person is raising their voice at you, you can say, you know, when I'm shouted at, or you could say, you know, when you raised your voice moments ago, I felt sad. Or I felt hurt. And what I'd like, you can make a request if you want to. You can say something along the lines of, and what I'd like is that, you know, we could discuss things in a calmer tone, or we can discuss things in a way that maybe can bring us closer. Hmm. Or you can just say, you know, when you raised your voice, or, you know, when you did this thing, I felt sad or I felt hurt. And I think it's important to emphasize that when you say I feel, a feeling has to come after that, not an allegation, or not something that is not a feeling, but an actual feeling. You're letting them know how you feel. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Without the expectation that you are going to receive what you wish that you could receive from them in return. This is about you.
Yes. And very often, you know, like I said before, we've never had the opportunity to speak up, maybe because we know what's the point, or we're very frightened. And I think that is very empowering to speak up. So, yeah, I like that.
Absolutely. And I think it's important because it's an act of taking your power back.
Yeah.
It is. Taking your power back. And it's something that I forgot to say that's coming up for me also, is that one of the things that people can possibly do before the event is creating a plan of action. Like creating a, if this goes wrong, this is what I'm going to do. Like, I'm going to leave. I'm going to call my friend. I'm going to do this. That you have a plan of action if things don't go as you had wished they'd gone, or if you feel unsafe.
Yeah, I like that. So you're equipping yourself. That can create a sense of security, I think.
Yes. And control.
Mm-hmm.
And control. And that's important for survivors, because many times during abuse, you are not in control. You're helpless. And so this is a way that you can't really anticipate or know what's going to happen while you're there, but you know at least what's in your control is that you can do something about it if it becomes too much for you. And having a plan before you go into these family events can help, can be, you know, really beneficial.
I like this, because everything that we're discussing and everything that you're sharing, what I'm feeling and thinking about is how you're empowering the person to not feel, because often you can retreat back into that feeling of being the small child that hadn't, you know, no voice and no way out and was abused. But what you're doing with what we're sharing is it's empowering you to feel, you know, more like an adult, which is amazing.
Right. Yeah. Because we can't control them. We can't control how they're going to respond. We can't control any of that, but we can control us.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And we have choices, which I love, because again, if we don't have a plan, or if we like with all of these things we're talking about, it feels like there's options. We're not stuck. Like, there's things we can do to feel empowered. And whether that's, like you said, taking a break or having a plan of action or being in a donut, we're doing stuff, which is fabulous.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very important. And I think even after, like when the event is over, when you have survived, and you are leaving the event, I think it's really important then to self-soothe. So, I mean, whether that looks like essential oils, whether that looks like a nice warm bath, whether that looks like another walk in nature, whether that looks like whatever it looks like, that you soothe yourself after, that you practice some self-care, even if it means going to bed early or just getting more rest the next day, that you do that. And that if it's possible, that you reach out to your community, that you reach out to your tribe and have some community care.
Yeah, that's great. Some support and some nurturance through that support. I love it. Mm-hmm. That's a great suggestion. Wow, this has been really, really helpful. And I hope that people will be able to feel a little bit more hopeful about going into these parties or gatherings with a little bit more sense of peace.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I appreciate your time, Natalie. Did you want to say anything else?
I think I just wanted to add one more thing.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, when you're home and you are processing the rest of your day, I mean, that you're processing that evening, that you tell yourself, even if it's a mantra before bed, or a mantra when you get in, that you tell yourself that you did it, that you tell yourself that you're good enough, that you tell yourself that you're worthy enough, that you tell yourself that you are enough, because you're giving yourself this approval that is not, what's the word? I guess that is not, that it's not your family's approval. Mm. It's your approval. Again, taking your power back, approving yourself, not allowing the disapproval of your family or the, you know, the negative, narratives of you to become your narratives of you.
Yeah, I love that. And before you go to bed, ending the night with that, which is, you know, saying the truth.
Yeah, I love that. Saying the truth.
Yeah.
Saying the truth about yourself. I'm yeah. enough. I'm yeah. good enough. Worthy enough.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you, Natalie, for coming on. I'm sure I'm going to have you on again. But I really appreciate
it. I appreciate you for reaching out to me, and I would love to. I'll be back as many times as you wish.
Thanks, Natalie. All right, you take good care.
You too. Thanks, okay. Monique.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you found this conversation with Natalie encouraging. If you'd like to get in touch with me with regards to my coaching options, you could reach me on my website at www.cptsdcoach.com. You can visit me on my Facebook page and on my Instagram page at cptsdcoach. Until the next episode, have a great day and take good care.